We're taking up the story of the burning bush, Moshe and the burning bush, and the extensive dialogue that takes place over there. Obviously, the main theme seems to be Moshe's reluctance to assume the responsibility, the position of being the leader, and his arguing, so to speak, with God. But that's not what we're going to be focusing on right now. After his initial resistances, and he asks a lot of questions. It seems that he asks two major questions. One is with regard to the name of God. When he goes back to the Jews and tells them that God had appeared to him, he anticipates that they're going to question him. They're going to ask him the name of God. The basic purpose of asking him, of course, the name itself, the Rambam takes all this up. The Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim goes through this at length. You have to understand what is meant by the name. We can't assume it's a childish thing, that it just has a name by which it's known, or a title, so to speak. That wouldn't mean anything. The fact that Moshe would know the name wouldn't prove that God had appeared to him. So the Rambam explains, essentially, that the name indicates the concept, the idea, that the elders of the nation had received from the predecessors, going all the way back to Abraham, ideas, metaphysical ideas, about the concept of God as it was understood by the leading figures, the forefathers of the Jewish nation. So that's something that's a teaching, that's knowledge. It's just you can't just give it over with a word, as you could a name. So they would test Moshe to see whether he had an accurate understanding of this concept. But in and of itself, that too wouldn't be sufficient. Just because a person has the correct idea doesn't mean to say that God has appeared to him. Thus, the second question is with regard to signs. And that's expressed in chapter 4, in the first pasuk, Vayan Moshe Vayomer. Moshe responded to God and said, Vehein lo yaminu li. They will not believe me. V'lo yishmu b'koli, and they won't listen to my voice. He's anticipating, or he's predicting that the Jews, even if he were to give over to them the concept of God, as it was taught to him by God, that wouldn't be sufficient. Ki yomru, for they will say, lo nira elecha ad Hashem, that God has not appeared unto you. Just a side point, there's a certain assumption over here that the Jews are skeptical. Today, there are many Jews that try and promote certain people who are charismatic, implying that they have special powers, or that they don't call it nevuah, prophecy, overtly, but they imply that these people know more, they have extra insight on the verge of nevuah. Today, you see among many religious Jews a certain type of a gullibility. Very gullible, very eager to believe that there are people, anyone that they look up to and assume has reached a high level in terms of Judaism, very willing to believe that this person has extra powers. Certain willingness, in spite of the absence of any real proof. And they look down on people who are critical, who are skeptical. So what is the correct attitude? Should a person in this arena have a willingness to believe that people who appear to be very religious, that they have special powers or even prophecy or something akin to prophecy? Or should one treat such a thing with skepticism? It seems to me that the correct attitude, as it's set forth, especially in Devarim, that one should have a healthy skepticism. We recognize the possibility that there is such a phenomenon as prophecy, but it's not something which every ordinary person can partake of. It's something which only very rare people can partake of. And even amongst those individuals who are very advanced and would seem, to all intents and purposes, to be candidates for that, it's something that has to be established by proof. The Rambam discusses the way an individual who claims to be a prophet would have to establish himself. It's not a simple thing. It has to be verified in a very scrupulous kind of a way, very exacting, so that throughout all of history, you see how mankind has been plagued by individuals claiming to be prophets, false prophets. The history of the Western world, to a large extent, is the history of the damage that's been done by false prophets, but more than that, by the innate gullibility of the masses, that people are exceedingly gullible and are prepared to accept the fact that someone had a revelation from God purely on the basis of certain feelings that they have, without verification. Prophecy without verification. That's the story of all the other religions, except for Judaism. Judaism maintains prophecies only through verification. It would seem from this that Moshe's response rather, was appropriate. He stated it as a statement. It's interesting the way he chooses to formulate his words. He doesn't ask for a proof. He merely says, they will not believe me. And they will say that God did not appear to you. At this point, you have to ask the question, is there anything wrong with Moshe's statement? Is he wrong to maintain that the Jews will have that kind of response, that the Jews won't believe that God appeared to him? Offhand, it would seem that there's nothing wrong with that. Because why should they? To the contrary, it seems to me to be a compliment to them. The other way around, to assume that he's going to go back and he's going to present himself, whether they know about him or don't know about him, whatever they do know about him, and then they're going to test him, and he's going to be able to explain the correct concept of God, which they themselves are aware of, they're wise men, so that means you're a wise man. But in and of itself, it doesn't mean that God appeared to you. So he's basically saying that these people are intelligent people. They're not going to accept it. Why should they accept it? Moshe also is aware of the fact that the people he's going to speak to are people that are aware of the phenomenon of prophecy. If they weren't aware of the phenomenon of prophecy, so then it would be very, very difficult to tell them that God spoke to them if they don't even know that there's such a thing as prophecy. But that's clearly part of the inheritance that they have from the fathers, that there's such a thing as prophecy. God communicates to people. But this group of people that he's talking to did not just accept anyone as being a prophet. It would seem that they had standards. They studied the area of prophecy. The elders that Moshe would go to had studied the area to know what the criteria would have to be that would make sense. So Moshe states that they are not going to believe me, which, as we said, makes a lot of sense. Then it says, Vayomer Elav Hashem, God's response, God says to Mazeh Biyadecha, what's that in your hand? Vayomer Mateh, and he says a staff. It's interesting why you have to have a pasuk in which God asks him. Obviously, God knows. Well, that's true. In many cases where God will ask a question, God knows. But in this case, it doesn't seem to be any point because Moshe knows also. Anyways, then it says, Vayomer, and God said, Ashlicheo Arza, to cast it to the ground. Vayashlicheo Arza, and he cast it to the ground. Vayhi lanachash, and it turned into a snake. Vayonas Moshe mipanav. And Moshe ran away from it. Vayomer Ad Hashem El Moshe, and God said to Moshe, Shlach Yadcha, stretch out your hand, Vechoz Biznavo, and grab its tail. Vayishlach Yado, and he stretched out his hand, Vayachazek Bo, and he seized it. Vayhi Lamate Bekapo, and it became a staff in his fist. Now, in Pasukei, Laman Yaminu, in order that they'll believe you, that the God of their fathers appeared to you. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Then God speaks to him again. Actually, of course, as we know, he gives him three signs. The next one is he tells him to put his hand inside of his bosom. And he did so. And then when he took it out, it had acquired saras, loosely translated as leprosy. a discoloration. Which, as we know, when the Torah was given, this was a supernatural, miraculous phenomenon, which is not in effect anymore, for people who are guilty of the sin of Lashon Hara, evil talk. And then God tells him to put his hand back in his bosom, and he did it, and he removed it, and it had healed. So that's the second of the miracles, the signs that he was supposed to perform. And then it says, and if they don't believe you, and they will not listen to this, to the voice, so to speak, the message of the first sign, then they'll believe the message of the second sign. And if they will not believe both of these signs, and they won't listen to your voice, then God gives them a third one, which is interesting because this one is not demonstrated before Moshe, just that God is telling him to do it. Just do the first two. If the first two don't work, then go to the third. And that is to take from the waters of the Or. Well, obviously, the waters of the Nile, which cannot be done where Moshe is because he's in the Midbar. He's in the wilderness. And spill it onto the ground. And the water that you take from the Nile will turn it into blood on the ground. It's difficult, of course, to fault Moshe after reading this. Because if Moshe was at fault for saying the Jews wouldn't believe him, so then God should have rebuked him. Instead, the God gives him signs. It seems from God's response that Moshe Rabbeinu was justified, because God proceeds to give him signs. Not just one sign, but two. But then God himself says, if they don't believe, v'hayim lo yaminu. If they will not believe the message of these two signs, so then God gives them a third. So God is also saying that they may not believe you. Of course, we know that God knows, but that God is entering into a conversation with Moshe. All this is for the benefit of Moshe. Rashi, basing himself on the words of the rabbis, says that Moshe was being punished here. There's a different level on which to understand these psukim. For example, when God asks him, what is that in your hand? So that can also be read as one word. It's written as one word instead of two. It should be mazeh, but it's written as one word. Now, mazeh, the point of that, according to the rabbis, is mizeh, from that which is in your hand. So they say you are guilty. You deserve to be punished, smitten, because you were choshed b'ksherim. You were suspicious of good people, of righteous people. Upshuto, Rashi says the plain meaning of the text, getting back to the point we'd raised, is that God asks him that question. It's a rhetorical question. Ka'adam sh'om l'chavero. It's like a person says to his friend, moda ata shezu shalfanecha evenhi. That is, if you're going to make a demonstration, you want to transform an object, let's say, to show how a certain object can be transformed, assuming you're doing it through some scientific means, or if you were an illusionist and you wanted to create an illusion. So before you go ahead and do it, you tell the person to look at the object and tell me, what do you see? What is this object? So that is so that afterwards the person can't say, well, I should have looked at it more closely. In order for the person to be convinced, they have to affirm that this is what it is. So that's the way God's doing it. That is, affirm that this is a staff. So Moshe says, yes. Okay, then he says, I'm going to take this, I'm going to make it into a snake. That's the method in which this type of thing should be done. That's the plain meaning of the text. Nevertheless, there's a hint that Moshe was wrong in suspecting the Jews. Rashi continues along these lines with the first sign, which is the snake. That is there any reason why the miracle, the demonstration, had to do with the staff turning into a snake? What's the concept of the snake? So Rashi says, Remez, Ramazlo, he hinted to him, Shesiper Lashon Hara Yisrael, that he spoke Lashon Hara about Israel. Biomro, when he said, Lo Yaminu Li, they won't believe me. V'tafasum naso shel nachash. And that was utilizing the ways of the snake. Now, Rashi says the same thing with regard to the second sign, which was Tsaras, that God caused his hand to be afflicted with Tsaras. And there too, Rashi says that in this sign as well, God hinted to him that he had spoken Lashon Hara when he said, Lo yaminu li, they won't believe me. Therefore, God smote him with Tsaras, in the same way that Miriam was smitten with Tsaras for speaking Lashon Hara about the Jews. Of course, this leads us to a very, very strong question. It seems to me that we could ask what's referred to as a manashach question, either or. That is to say, is this Lashon Hara or not? If it is, so then why is he only being punished in a manner which is like a hint, a remez? The comparison is made with Miriam. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe, even though she had good intentions and she thought he had made a mistake and she did not mean to besmirch him in any way, to be disrespectful. Nevertheless, it's considered to be Lashon Hara. And she was punished in an overt way, not in a manner which hinted to her. She received the full punishment of Tsaras, and she had to be removed from the camp for 7 days. So if that's the case, if Moshe was guilty, and at least on the surface, the type of Lashon Hara that he's being accused of seems to be at least as serious as Miriam's, if not more, if that's true that he slandered the Jewish people and said that they're lacking something in terms of their emunah, their belief, that seems on the surface to be as bad, if not worse. So why doesn't he get a real punishment? The fact that the staff turns into a snake and he runs away from it, that's not a real punishment. 2 seconds later, God tells him to pick it up and it's a staff again. Well, why is the effect or the response to Moshe by way of a hint? If it's a sin, he should be punished. On the other hand, if it's not, so then why a hint? What's the hint over here? It doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't fit, either or. Either you did Lashon Hara or you didn't do Lashon Hara. If you did Lashon Hara, you should receive a punishment. If you didn't do it, so then you shouldn't receive a hint. What's the hint? Why is God relating to him by way of hint if indeed he spoke Lashon Hara? The Rambam in the guide, in the paperback edition on page 93, says, Moses was correct in declaring, quote, but behold, they will not believe me, for they will say, the Lord has not appeared unto you. End of quote. For any man claiming the authority of a prophet must expect to meet with such an objection, so long as he has not given a proof of his mission. Now, so the Rambam is saying that Moshe didn't say anything wrong. He was correct. All he was saying was that without a proof, without a sign, the people will not believe him. You have to learn this way because, as we said, God's response was not to rebuke him. God's response, on the contrary, was to give him the sign. Now, if Moshe was wrong and he was not supposed to question, he was simply supposed to go, and the assumption is that they would accept that God had spoken to him even without a proof, so then God shouldn't have given him the signs. It's obvious from the fact that God provides him with the signs. And then, as we said, God also says if they don't believe, the first two. So that indicates that even with the signs, it's possible that they won't believe. That seems to be in accordance with the same idea of Moshe, even more so. That God is saying they may not believe even the first two. They may need more. I would like to suggest a possibility over here that hopefully will resolve the problem that we're having. A person's statements can have different levels of meaning and significance. There's the overt level of the statement itself, and you can express an intention within that same statement. A different intention that can be expressed. Let me see if I can give an example. Let's say you are given a task to teach a child something or to prepare somebody for something, and you don't really believe that the person has the capability of doing it. However, due to the situation, you received your orders. Let's say you're in the army or whatever it is, some kind of an organization, and your superiors have told you to prepare this person for the mission. You don't believe he has the capability. However, aside from that, your next point is that you don't have the materials that are necessary. So you then can respond to them and say he won't be able to do it because he won't be able to be trained, something along those lines. Now, when you say he won't be able to do it, you're verbalizing a different intention. Now, on the surface, it's a legitimate statement because you're connecting that with the specific, with the particular, which is legitimate. However, in your mind, that statement, he won't be able to do it, is expressing an independent thought, your conviction that he really doesn't have the ability to do it at all. So, of course, you can't be accused of denying that the person has the ability because you could say, I wasn't saying that. I was saying it in reference to the specific that's necessary. However, in terms of God, God knows the hidden thoughts. You really couldn't defend yourself before God. Thus, it seems to me what the intent of the Chazal is that the statement of Moshe Rabbeinu is on different levels. And Rashi's not contending. Rashi's not arguing against the statement. The overt level is correct. It's obvious. You must say that. That on the overt level, Moshe was basically saying that he needed a sign. It's interesting that he chose to say it this way. He didn't ask for a sign. Rather, he utilized the opportunity to make that statement. They will not believe. If you ask him what he meant by that, of course he would have said, because I don't have any proof. But he chose to formulate it that way. So it seems to me that this is the critique that included in that statement, there was a thought of Moshe. Moshe harbored within himself the thought that there was something lacking in them, that it wasn't just a case of the practicalities, but there was something lacking in the Jewish people. And when he made that statement, he was expressing that thought, even though on a conscious level, that's not what he was saying. Therefore, he was not guilty of the sin of Lashon Hara, because the sin of Lashon Hara is determined by what you're saying on the conscious level. If you're making a legitimate statement about someone that he won't be able to do it, that's because he doesn't have the materials that he needs. But deep down, you believe that he won't be able to do it at all. That's not Lashon Hara, because the statement itself is a legitimate statement. However, in dealing with God, it's a different story. God knows the bochein kleios v'lev. God knows the heart, the innermost thoughts of a person. Thus, God wanted to be merames, to hint to him, to make him aware. It was essential for the success of Moshe's mission that he examine all of the thoughts that he had with regard to the Jews. This is a very important lesson that can be derived from this for teachers, for parents, for anyone, for leaders. And that is that if you harbor real doubts about the ability of the child, the ability of the student, the people, if you have a certain criticism of them, you feel that they're not up to it, even though on the surface you're going to go through the program. The fact is that it's very necessary for a teacher or a parent or a leader to be aware of all of their feelings that they have about the people. Because if deep down you're really convinced that they can't do it, even though you're going to make a strong effort, it's going to affect the effort. And it's very important to be in touch with those feelings. Even if you can't get rid of those feelings, but at least you should be aware of them so that they don't influence the way you go about it. Because if you have a defeatist attitude, if deep down you don't really believe that they're capable, then you're just going to go through the motions. Or you're going to make mistakes. So I think that it was essential that God pointed this out. That's what the pasuk is telling you. That God was merames, that God indicated to Moshe Rabbeinu to look into this area. Of course, for two reasons. Because first of all, it's wrong. It does partake of Lashon Hara in that it's a conclusion. It's a disparagement of the people, which is unwarranted. You're jumping to conclusions, perhaps because of certain experiences that Moshe had with them in Egypt before he fled Egypt. Nevertheless, it partakes of Lashon Hara, because you shouldn't come to such a conclusion. You shouldn't be biased against them. Secondly, it's very important for the leader to be aware of all of the negative feelings that he may have towards the ones he's supposed to lead, because you can't be effective as a leader if there's a certain element of negativity. If you harbor a certain attitude towards them and you view them as being incapable of the mission. So it's therefore possible that it's in the formulation, the way he formulated the statement as a negative. He chose to express it as a negative. Now, of course, when you decipher it, as we said, it's true. And God said that it's possible they won't listen to the first two, and they'll need more. But that's different. That's an assessment. That's an assessment of where they're at and what is needed in order to bring them to the level where they're capable of accepting it. But they're definitely capable of accepting it. This explains why the Moshe did not receive a punishment as Miriam did. Because the case of Miriam was a real case of Lashon Hara. Consciously, overtly. She spoke about Moshe. She criticized Moshe. And even though she didn't do so out of bad motives, but nevertheless, that's what the Torah is teaching us, that was wrong to speak that way. Moshe Rabbeinu was not accusing the Jews of anything over here on the overt level. The intention of the thought was that they won't believe because I'm lacking in proof. So that statement, they won't believe because I'm lacking in proof, is not Lashon Hara. Nevertheless, as we've said, that statement can also be expressing a deeper idea that they won't believe at all. And that, I think, is what God was pointing out to him by hint. But he did not receive the full punishment, because that doesn't make sense. You can't punish a person for a deeper thought, for an unconscious, a conviction. If a person harbors a certain conviction on a certain level of his psyche, but he wasn't manifesting it. It wasn't a conscious phenomenon. So you can't be punished for that in the ordinary way. But nevertheless, because of his level of perfection and because of the mission, God wanted to bring that to his attention. According to the statement of the Chazal, of the rabbis, it seems to me that Moshe held at a certain level of consciousness in his mind that it wasn't just circumstantial. It wasn't just a simple matter that he needed signs, but that the Jews had a certain defect with regard to their belief, their capacity for emunah, their ability to develop the proper type of conviction in God, the existence of God, and to trust in God, to base their actions on that conviction. And that's what the Gemara talks about in Shabbos, that the Moshe was rebuked. To the contrary, they are maminim, they are believers, b'nei maminim, they are the children of believers. That is, that this virtue is something which has been cultivated among their forebears, and they too partake of the virtue. And that to the extent that Moshe maintained that they have a defect, that was a distortion of the truth with regard to the B'nai Yisrael.